live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. Welcome to the Young Turks, Cenk Uranek, Kasparyan with you guys. I'm in a surprisingly chipper mood given the surrender we're gonna talk about in a second.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't worry guys, don't you worry your sweet little heart over it. We will be livid within the 60 to 120 seconds, okay?
No, I'm a little like Trump in that he believes energy is finite, which is why he doesn't work out. I think that my rage and depression is also finite. So at some point last night after, like, I was literally crying in the kitchen as I was making dinner over like progressive surrendering. And I just felt so depressed and I was like, I'm gonna make a decision to not be depressed tomorrow. Like regardless of the bad news, because we gotta gear up, we gotta give people what they want, we gotta give them the news.
We gotta do it. But I like that there's, you know, the downside of shortages are we have like labor shortages and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you apparently have a depression shortage, like you just ran out. There's nothing you can do, which is like the best thing to ever run out of, right? So now having said that, stock up. Because we're gonna give you more bad news.
Yes, yes. All right, well, of course, we're gonna start off today by giving you an update on where we stand, where Democrats stand on the budget reconciliation bill. Well, here are the details. So, in a closed door meeting with her caucus, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urged House Democrats, including progressives, to vote in favor of the budget reconciliation bill and of course, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, also known as the corporate handout bill. Now, she is expecting a vote on these bills by the end of the week, on Thursday specifically, although she's trying to keep her powder dry, as they say in politics, and not announce a specific date as she has in the past. Now, Pramila Jayapal is very much part of the negotiations, considering the fact that she's the leader of the progressives, and she continues to disappoint us today. Now, Pelosi told Democrats at Tuesday's morning caucus meeting that hopefully by midday, they will be able to freeze the design of the reconciliation bill. She said leaders are waiting for Manchin and another key Democrat, Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, to weigh in on final provisions over climate change and lowering prescription drug costs. And by the way, more on that in just a minute. And the immigration provisions, which remain in flux. Now, Pelosi said that the next step is to bring the Biden package to the Rules Committee. She plans on doing that by Wednesday of this week, meaning tomorrow, which would pave the way for a vote as soon as Thursday on the bill, as well as a companion $1 trillion infrastructure package. Remember, that infrastructure package is not really $1 trillion. It uses money that was appropriated specifically for COVID and has a little over $500 billion in new spending. The remarks were conveyed by a person familiar with her comments who requested anonymity to share details about this private meeting. Now, really the big question is, where does Joe Manchin stand, right? And Joe Manchin, even with all the concessions that he got from the Biden administration, from the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, still refuses to commit to voting in favor of it. He claims he's waiting for the Congressional Budget Office to weigh in on how this would impact the overall federal budget. Manchin said he's open to voting for a final bill reflecting Biden's big package that moves our country forward, but he said he's equally open to voting against the final product as he assesses the sweeping social services and climate change bill. And of course, he's got these massive conflicts of interest since he profits so handsomely off of the fossil fuel industry, particularly coal. Cenk, I'm gonna go to a quick video of Manchin from today and then we'll open it up. Let's watch.
Basically, it's time to do something. The president's over there. He went there. He asked for something before he left, and everyone ignored it. I didn't ignore it, and I thought of something that could have been done. It was very easy to ask. Just vote for the bipartisan infrastructure bill. It has a tremendous amount of clean energy in it. Would have helped an awful lot, and it does an awful lot, more than we've ever done before. They can even do that because they're saying it's not. The perfect is going to be the enemy of the good if we don't sit down and be rational about what we're doing. Sorry.
So there you have it, Manchin continuing to apply pressure on progressives, and Representative Jayapal is about to deliver. So thoughts?
Yeah. All right. First, Pelosi presses progressives to give up. Of course she does. Look, if you watch this show regularly, you will see that we're almost never wrong about these things. And I'm not saying that in a bragging way. I'm saying that so you can see with your own eyes exactly what happens in politics, and that you could see that it's all theater, it's all fake. Right? So that Pelosi pretended to be with the progressives all along. We were the only ones who told you she's not with them. She's gonna run out the clock and at the end pressure them to give Manchin what he wants. And that's exactly what happened. So that's happening right now today. Okay, number two, there is upside here. We're fair. We don't take like one random side, including, by the way, the progressive side, and say, oh, no, progressive legislators are always right. And people are used to that here in America because our media is so terrible. So mainstream media supports corporate politicians no matter what. Right-wing media supports Trump supporting Republicans no matter what. We don't do that here, okay? So now the good news is it looks like they're gonna have a written bill in the House. And so now Biden is saying yes, the Senate will definitely pass that version, that House version they're about to pass.
Okay? There's no promise that that'll actually happen.
Yeah, no, there's a promise from Biden.
Okay. There's a promise from Biden, but that really means nothing.
Okay, I totally agree. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
So Manchin, on the other hand, says, I do not promise it. He was very clear in his press conference. He said, it is equally likely that I will vote no. So later when Jayapal, as you're gonna see now, she's like, oh, I trust and love these people. My God, they would never, a politician lying, a corporate politician lying, it would never happen, my beloved Democratic colleagues, right? Well, later Manchin will say, I didn't lie. I told you before you surrendered that I wasn't gonna necessarily vote for your bill. And then Biden will say, oh, Jojo, he apparently calls him Jojo.
It's very cute.
Okay, hey Jojo, you promised those rascally progressives, you remember? And Manchin at that point will pretend to get offended about something that happened in the meanwhile. He'll say, oh, well, I was going to, but I didn't even say it though. I wasn't, but I would have out of good faith. But since they did XYZ, I can't do that anymore. So they're getting rooked and played as hard as you could possibly get played. And the planning here has been atrocious.
It has, yeah.
So right now, the ship is this close to sailing, and it doesn't look like there's any progressive revolt at all. So Manchin is about to get everything he wanted.
That's exactly right. And you're right in terms of progressives lacking any strategy. Progressives did in fact have leverage, because we're talking about the corporate wing of the Democratic Party and their corporate donors endlessly salivating over the pork in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which would of course go to them. That's why they're salivating over it. But the worst part about all of this is the lack of leadership for the Progressive Caucus. And without further ado, I give you Representative Pramila Jayapal. Let's watch.
This week, we will have votes on both the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better Act together, which is what we've called for weeks. So we finally got what we've been saying, and we're glad that people listened to us.
He was saying, trust me on Thursday though.
But we didn't have the bill. And he did not ask for us to vote on that day. He said, I need votes on both bills. And we have been saying for months, we are not going to vote just on an idea or a promise or a framework. We're gonna vote on legislation. The minute we have legislation, we can look at it. Our members can decide whether it is good enough, which we feel very good about, then we will pass both bills. And I think that is what we've been saying for weeks. I don't understand why anyone's confused about it.
I take offense to the way that she framed it there, because she's lying. This was not their strategy from the jump. Their strategy initially was to refuse voting on the bipartisan infrastructure bill until there was passage of the reconciliation bill in the Senate. Now she's completely surrendered, and she's saying, no, we're gonna vote on both bills and pass both bills before we get passage of the reconciliation bill in the Senate. Even that stripped down, pared back reconciliation bill, we still don't have a commitment from Joe Manchin, but Pramila Jayapal is saying, well, Biden promises that he'll get it done in the Senate, so we're gonna go ahead and do this. Okay, well, that is a change in strategy. That's why people might be a little confused, as she put it. But don't act like, you know, this has been a consistent strategy among progressives, and all of a sudden people are confused and don't know what's going on. No, you changed what you were doing. And it's very clear to everyone paying attention.
So look, I know in Washington, everything is about personal allegiances. So which side are you guys on? Which politician's side are you on? We're not on any politician's side. So I like Jayapal. I've met her, she's a very nice person, and she's definitely a real progressive, okay? But she's wrong here. And furthermore, in this case, she's crossed the line. What she's saying is not true. It is definitively not true. They said that they would not pass the infrastructure bill in the House until the reconciliation, the bigger one, passed in the Senate. Not in the House, passed in the Senate. Because that was the whole point of that trade. Now she's pretending that they didn't say that, and they meant that they're gonna pass them together in the House. Well, that's just flat out not true. And we're not gonna tell you that it's true. I don't know if that's what her expectation is, that the media is just supposed to work for her. Okay, and by the way, John Berman, credit to him, he actually asked really good questions in that CNN interview, and he held her to account. So she had to give this ridiculous answer. Now, the second part of it is, as I told you earlier, the fact that they're gonna have a written bill at least is something, because it's tangible. Now, what's in the bill is, I think, pretty bad to approaching terrible. So we'll get to that later, but at least they'll have a written bill. Okay, now, then comes the question, who's right and who's wrong? Jayapal says, here, if you get past the fact that she's not telling the truth about the order of things, but it's okay. Let's say that they're gonna pass it. It looks like they're going to in the House. They're gonna give them both. Then it's gonna go to the Senate as a written bill from the House, concrete. Will they vote on that bill and pass it? She says, Biden says, definitely, okay? And I'm telling you right now, no way. Now you're gonna get to see on your own who's right and who's wrong. I'm telling you right now, the minute they pass the infrastructure bill, that's the corporate backed bill, they lose all leverage instantly. They have literally zero leverage. I wish it weren't the case, but that's the case. And so what is Manchin gonna do? What any sensible negotiator would do. I changed my mind. In fact, I didn't even change my mind. I told you ahead of time that I was equally likely to vote no. And you were an idiot and surrendered to me anyway. I mean, look, it's uncomfortable, but it's true. Who would surrender to a guy who said, I might not even give you what you want? How is that a negotiation? No, that's just a surrender, that's all it is. You can pretty it up and you can get offended at us for calling it what it is, but it's at this point like embarrassingly obvious.
Yes.
So is Manchin gonna vote yes, and Sinema gonna vote yes on that House version of that concrete bill? My guess is no, they will not. The only thing they'll do is they'll then strip it out even further, this already sucks. And they'll strip out more provisions and anything that hurts their corporate donors even $1. And then they'll say, now you could vote on this piece of trash that we handed back to you at the House. And then that way we'll all get to do fake marketing about what historic bill it was. And if you don't vote for it, we'll browbeat you and say, oh my God, these guys are, no, well, the deal is off if they're not gonna vote on the piece of garbage we gave them. Or they won't pass it at all. And then they'll laugh their ass off at you.
Okay.
And when that happens, Jayapal should no longer be the leader of the Progressive Caucus. That's obvious. The only thing that would prevent that is the feelings of the people in the caucus. Now, if I'm wrong though, if she gets that concrete written bill passed, I think it still sucks, but at least she would be right about that and you give her credit for that.
I don't even really think we need to wait and see what happens with the pared down reconciliation bill to make a decision about Pramila Jayapal's leadership. Her leadership has been awful. There has been a lack of strategy, an unwillingness to use the leverage the progressives have. And I think that the worst scenario is very likely. And that worst scenario is that they're gonna pass the corporate handout bill and possibly not get passage of the reconciliation bill, which with everything that's been taken out of it, there are still some important provisions, right? Including universal pre-K, something that is not being means tested, something that applies to everyone universally, right? So that's huge. I mean, that's essentially childcare. And we've talked about the childcare provision and how that's lacking and everything. But what's also interesting, Cenk, is during that same interview on CNN, Jayapal was asked about Representative Ro Khanna, who is also a progressive. He's part of the Progressive Caucus. And just last weekend, he was doing his rounds on the Sunday shows, giving his interviews about the reconciliation bill. And I thought the way that Pramila Jayapal answered questions about his appearances was telling. So let's just quickly watch that.
One of the things I saw over the weekend was your colleague and member of the Progressive Caucus, Ro Khanna, went out and did the Sunday shows. And he said on Sunday, which is before you've announced, and now you're crystal clear, you're a yes on both bills, you want the vote right now. Congressman Khanna said it Sunday, he basically said it first. And after he said it, Ron Klain, who's the White House Chief of Staff, who according to Politico and others, you've been in conversations with pretty intensely for the last month. Ron Klain sends out not one, not two, not three tweets gushing over Ro Khanna. And one of them is a retweet of Gene Sperling that said, thank you for your leadership, Ro Khanna. And I just was, it struck me as the White House picking members of the Progressive Caucus that they're more happy with there.
Well, look, I mean, people are gonna do whatever they're gonna do. I represent the caucus. Most of our members have stayed with not getting out in front of the caucus. But you know, if somebody wants to say they're gonna vote for the bill, that's fine. When we say yes, we say yes. When we say no, we say no. And people should learn that I don't say that unless I know I have the votes.
So why did Khanna do that though? Because that is true. Ro Khanna gives these interviews. He says that he's a yes vote on the honestly stripped down reconciliation bill. And so it was that, I know it's ridiculous to think that progressives even have any strategy considering the lacking strategy in this whole reconciliation debate, but did Ro Khanna go out there and like, you know, basically take it for Pramila Jayapal ahead of time?
What was that? Look, I don't know for sure, and we could settle it because Ro Khanna is gonna be on the show on Friday, so we'll ask him. But it looks like Jayapal was not happy that Ro Khanna went out first. And so, but it doesn't really matter, because if you're the leader, you just say, yeah, he's not the leader, I am, and I speak for the caucus. And but you have to back that up, it has to be true, right? And if so, if Ro or anybody else had said, oh yes, we're gonna take both from Manchin, and you're the, and I'm the leader, and that's not where we're at, I come out tomorrow and we go, no, we're not. And that's it, we're done with it. And then his points become irrelevant. So it just takes strong leadership.
So I want to reset the discussion to talk about some of the provisions that are now going to be implemented in the reconciliation bill, at least in the House, right? Again, there's no promise that it'll pass in the Senate, but prescription drugs are apparently back as part of this discussion. Let's discuss. So Joe Manchin made it abundantly clear that he is not in favor of Medicare expansion. Joe Manchin has not been in favor of allowing for Medicare to negotiate drug prices directly with pharmaceutical companies. Now we're hearing though that the House has managed to include a provision in the reconciliation bill that they plan on voting for that includes kind of like a half measure, if you want to be generous and call it that. So the New York Times reporting today that the prescription drug deal is limited. Starting in 2023, negotiations could begin on what Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon called the most expensive drugs, treatments for cancer and rheumatoid arthritis, as well as anticoagulants. Sorry, I have a hard time pronouncing that word. Now, most drugs would still be granted patent exclusivity for 9 years before negotiations could start, and more advanced drugs called biologics would be protected for 12 years. So, Cenk, it's again, if you want to call it a half measure, I guess you could, but not really. I mean, this isn't the same thing as allowing for Medicare to negotiate all drug prices directly with pharmaceutical companies. The final deal includes a $2,000 annual cap on out-of-pocket expenditures for older Americans facing catastrophic health issues, a strict $35 monthly cap on insulin expenses, and automatic rebates on drugs whose prices rise faster than inflation. Now, again, it really depends on whether or not the reconciliation bill ends up passing in the Senate. But what are your thoughts on this pared back version of the drug negotiation provision?
I think it's a joke. I don't understand. Like, my understanding right now is, reporting from Bloomberg, is that we're gonna get to negotiate 10 drug prices. 10, just right. On 10 drugs. And that starts in the year 2025. Oh, wow. I didn't know you guys were gonna be this generous. I thought maybe it was gonna be 7 or 6 drugs we're gonna negotiate. There are thousands of drugs. This is a joke. It's all it is a face-saving gesture. So you're not humiliated, and you could pretend there was a compromise. But in reality, when you realize how pathetic it is, it's actually more embarrassing. And I think they can get all the way up to like 25 or 35 drugs in the year 2028.
Yep.
Okay, wow, 7 years from now, we might be up to a couple of dozen drugs we can negotiate out of the thousands and thousands of drugs there are in America. You know what that is? That's not negotiating drug prices. That's making sure you don't negotiate drug prices while pretending you did. Now, of course, what'll happen next is corporate media will go along with this charade. And they'll say, oh, historic transformation. 2 to 3 drugs will be negotiated 17 years from now.
I mean, even
it's a joke, guys.
It is.
Any real reporter would tell you that is a ridiculous, pathetic joke.
Even if that provision wasn't included in the final version of the reconciliation bill, Democrats were still gonna do the PR. They were still gonna pretend like this was a life-changing, unprecedented piece of legislation that would overwhelmingly improve everyone's lives. Now look, there are still some decent provisions in the reconciliation bill, but you gotta look at what Biden had promised, what he campaigned on, and what the final reconciliation bill looks like. No paid family or medical leave. You do not have a permanent child tax credit. That was something that Biden was really trying to celebrate as one of his major agenda items. Also the penalties for utilities that refuse to switch over to renewable energy. They got rid of the benefits or the rewards that utilities would get if they do in fact move to renewable energy. There's so many important parts of that bill that ended up getting scrapped as a result of the de facto president, Joe Manchin. And Joe Manchin still hasn't committed to voting in favor of the reconciliation bill as it stands today with all those provisions stripped out, including 2 years of free community college. Gone. Yeah. So I don't look, Democratic leadership has been awful. Progressive leadership has been awful. But I also wanna just really reiterate the failure of the Biden administration, which insisted on dividing his agenda up into 2 different bills because they wanted Republicans to have a seat at the table. Remember, Republicans were at the White House engaging in these negotiations with Biden. Why? And now they want to turn around and say, no, don't focus on corporate Democrats, focus on Republicans and how they stopped us from doing what we needed to do. No, you don't get to blame Republican obstructionists when in reality, you're the one who invited them. You're the one who brought them, gave them a seat at the table, and you decided to divide this bill up into a corporate handout bill and a social spending bill that honestly looks nothing like it originally did.
It's dispiriting to be a Democrat because your own party is so weak. They're such liars that there's nothing to root for. The one thing you gotta give the Republicans is, as loathsome as Donald Trump is he's a lunatic, a narcissist, he's a con man, but he gives them something to root for, right? He seems like he's fighting for them. Like, oh my God, I hate immigrants as much as you do. And they're like, yeah, and they get excited by that, right? For us, the only thing we ask for is policy. We ask for higher wages and better healthcare, etc. And they will not give that to us under penalty of law because it's corporate rule. And so Biden has been lying about this from day one. I don't care who it offends. Let all of Washington cry over it. Oh, he's an honorable man. How could you say that? Get out of here, man. He told the donors that nothing would fundamentally change.
Yep.
Negotiating 10 drug prices is nothing fundamentally changing. The number goes up to 30 in the year 2028. Everyone who's rational knows that that is pathetic and that it's a cover job for you allowing corporate donors to get everything they wanted. So now what's more dispiriting, of course, is that the progressives go along. And now they'll be forced to walk the plank and do marketing for this awful so-called compromise as if it was historic transformation. And Representative Jayapal, the so-called leader of the Progressive Caucus, is already doing that on TV.
Yep.
Oh my God, before I saw the details, I saw her on TV bragging about this, about how they got, oh, you wait till you see the lowering the drug prices that we're gonna do. This was it? This was it? Nah. So our jobs tell the truth. These compromises are the worst things I've ever seen. Universal pre-K, the corporations wanted it anyway. The corporations have gotten everything they wanted. Yep. We got a couple of crumbs. And it's the same story every time. So you're not wrong to be disillusioned. And if they want us to lie to you guys to cheerlead so you'll vote for Democrats, why? Why? So I know on the social issues, but on the economic
barely
issues.
Barely even the social issues.
Barely, but what did I you mean, do? Did you do voting they, rights? You didn't do voting rights.
Police reform?
You didn't do police reform. Why the hell are we voting for Democrats? And then they'll do the same tired trick. Aren't you guys exhausted by it?
Yes.
What will they do? They'll blame us. They'll blame Young Turks in specific. Oh, you guys lowered the voter turnout. If you just lied to people and told them we got negotiated all drug prices when we had a perfect lie going and we were gonna just do 10. It's 10, guys. There's no argument. It's not like there's 12 drugs in the country. There's thousands of drugs in the country. 10 is a joke. And so we're not gonna lie. So note progressives in Congress. We're not gonna lie for you. That's not how progressive media works. This is a terrible so-called compromise, and you're gonna walk the plank on it. We all know it, and then you're gonna get mad at us for not defending a terrible deal.
Well,
here's a news break, do a better deal. Oh, but there's nothing we could do. But we had you run against corporate Democrats, because corporate Democrats' excuses, there's nothing we can do. If the progressive excuses, there's nothing we could do, then we elected the wrong people. So, oh, that's so harsh. You're screwing over the voters by pretending this is a real deal. That's actually mean. That's actually not delivering. Us telling people what you're actually doing is not the mean part. The part where you go, screw it, let's do a face-saving gesture. That's the part that sucks for everybody. This is the worst news. I wish I never had to deliver this to you. But that is what just happened. And by the way, after all of that, and after all that humiliation, Manchin and Sinema might vote no anyway. Sad. All right, when we come back, I gotta do one special segment. It's just real quick, guys. It's important for you to know what they could have done. Because they always say there was nothing we can do. That's not true. When we come back, I'll tell you what they could have done. Right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk and Anna with you guys. But we wanted to be constructive here. So I wanted to do one more thing for you guys. So as we've seen now, it looks like the progressives are gonna give in and they're gonna give Manchin, Sinema, Biden and Pelosi the vote that they want on the corporate backed infrastructure bill. And they're gonna pass their version of the Build Back Better bill. But there with no guarantees that it's gonna pass the Senate. We think that is a surrender. We think that is a terrible deal. And Manchin has said he might vote no anyway, despite progressives giving them everything they wanted. So now you guys know that, you've seen the details of it, we've covered it. Now the question is, is there anything they could do about it? Well, this is where bad leaders would tell you, oh well, golly gee, there was nothing we could do. Well, so I wanna be constructive here, right? And if you're gonna have critique, you should have an answer for what the alternative is. So here's the alternative. You do correct planning and strategy. So 6 months ago, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, even 2 weeks ago, what you say is, here are my red lines, and I am not under any circumstance moving off those red lines. Now you have to, but you can't bluff, it has to be real. And you have to be willing to sink the bill or go back into another set of painful negotiations. And if you say, well, I'm not willing to do that, well, then you're gonna lose. That's just how negotiations work. If you say ahead of time, you signal that you'll give the other side everything they want, they'll just take it all. So if someone really strong had won in Congress, like say Nina Turner, what she could have done is just pulled two other progressives. They just need three progressive votes in the House. That's it. And say, these are our red lines, and there's no way in the world we're gonna move off of them. But guys, you have to be realistic and practical. You can't say everything's your red line, but pick two giant ones that got negotiated away that are incredibly popular, like lowering drug prices, 88% popularity, paid family leave, over 70% popularity. If you can't win on those, you can't win on anything. So you draw your red lines. Now, that first part's fairly obvious. The second part is the part that current day progressives apparently cannot do and will not do, but need to do. And it's gonna freak them out when I tell you this. It's not gonna freak any of you out. You have to play hardball. And so if I was in those negotiations, I would hope that if Nina was in those negotiations, what she would do, well, let me just speak for myself. What I would do is I would go in and say, Senator Manchin, I know we're cordial and we're friends, and I'm happy to go out to lunch with you anytime you want, etc. But within this room, we're gonna do negotiation for our voters. So you're gonna have to deal with me as it is, okay? And what I'm telling you is, we're gonna give you your bill, the infrastructure bill that you planned out with corporations, and we want in return this bill. And if we don't get it, and you don't say yes to our red lines, it's okay. Everybody's free to do. You're a senator, I'm a senator, whatever those circumstances are, okay? But what we're gonna do is destroy your reputation. And you might think, oh, that's not gonna work, or that's too rude, but I am going to do that. Every day, me and my allies, we're gonna take turns on the floor of the House or the floor of the Senate, and we're gonna tell people about your donors one by one. And we're gonna say you're the most corrupt senator that America has ever had. And we're gonna make you the poster child for corruption. Now, already Bernie's out, Jayapal's out. They would never, ever, ever do that. In fact, the mere suggestion would offend them to their sensitive core, right? But guys, this is politics, and you don't play politics for fun. You play it so you can pass bills that affect people's lives. And you think Manchin wouldn't be affected by that? You're wrong. He would be deeply affected by that, as long as you're not bluffing. And if he says, no, oh yeah, I am offended, I'm not gonna do the bill, then you start. On day one, you hit, you know he's the number one recipient of coal, oil, and gas money. Now that should be obvious, probably a lot of you know it if you watch this show, but if you watch mainstream media, nobody knows it, right? And we're gonna outline your donors, then we're gonna move on to your own personal wealth and how you have it in coal and how you made $5 million and you've got another $5 million in wealth. And we're gonna embarrass you and embarrass you and embarrass you. If you sink our bill, we sink your career. That's actually hardball. Yes, it would definitely work. And if it didn't work with Manchin, after you obliterated his reputation and everyone in the country despised him, then when you turn to Sinema, she said, oh, whoa, okay, what do you need? What do you need? If you're not willing to do that, you're not a strong leader. And because you're worried about offending people you have personal friendships with or relationships with, instead you're hurting the voters because you're not willing to use something in your arsenal. The progressives in Congress, I've said it 1,000 times, I love them, but they've never called out corruption of Democratic colleagues. They started to a tiny bit around the edges on TV in this round. No, you have to be willing to say, he takes money from oil companies and he sold you out because of those legalized bribes. If you're not willing to say that, you have no leverage. And that's why you go around saying there's nothing I could do, and then Manchin wins and we lose.
All right, we're gonna take one brief break. And when we come back, we're gonna talk about surprise medical billing. There's a specific case in Georgia that will blow your mind. We've got that story and more when we return.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. I'm gonna read one super chat here. Fab Dragon said, we don't listen to TYT because we haven't formed opinions. We listen to TYT because TYT represents the wants and needs of 60% plus of American opinions. That is thank you. I think that's the most true thing that anybody said in terms of comments about TYT. Yes, they think we're making this up. We see what you're saying. We see the polling. All we're doing is trying to represent you guys. And anyway, the politicians can believe it or not. I don't care anymore. All right, Anna.
All right. A woman in Georgia was hit with a surprise bill from the emergency room, even though she waited in the emergency room but didn't receive any treatment. She waited so long that she ended up leaving without seeing a doctor, and it was for a pretty serious injury. So Taylor Davis said that she went to the Emory Decatur Hospital ER in July for a head injury. She says, I sat there for 7 hours. There's no way I should be sitting in an emergency room for 7 hours, she said. Now, a couple of weeks after she went to the emergency room and did not receive any treatment, she got a surprise bill in the mail that was nearly $700. So she shared a screenshot of the bill for $688.35. She actually thought it was a mistake, as most normal people would think, because again, she didn't get to see a doctor. She received absolutely no treatment. The only thing that happened was she showed up to the emergency room, checked in, and then waited for 7 hours without any treatment. Now, she did reach out to the hospital to try to figure out what's going on. She thought this was a mistake. So I called them. And she said it's hospital protocol, even if you're just walking in and you're not seen, when you type in your social, that's it, you're gonna get charged regardless. An email sent to Davis by the hospital, the financial services employee, states you get charged before you are seen, not for being seen.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. So
apparently it makes a lot of sense because Georgia is not the only state that has this issue. In fact, Georgia isn't even the most expensive state in regard to what's referred to as an emergency room visit fee, right? That's tacked on to your emergency room bill, right? So most people don't notice it because most people will get treatment. But in that bill, baked in is a fee just for showing up to the emergency room. The most expensive state for that emergency room visit fee is Florida. As CBS reports, Florida is the most expensive state for emergency room visits. Moderate severity ER patients are billed an average of $3,102 before insurance.
Yeah, guys, this is unbearable. They're asking for a revolution, and not just a political one. I'm trying to keep it political. I want it to be political, but. What insanity is this? This is total corporate rule, and they're crushing us to pieces. So let's break down what happened to her. First of all, you go to the emergency room, they don't treat you for 7 hours. They say, we have a wonderful private system. Do we? That's our private care in America, where yeah. You wait for 7 hours and don't even get treatment when you went to an emergency room. So if there's government, you're gonna have big lines. We already have big lines.
Yeah, we have big lines. For a patient who has a head injury, which is pretty serious. She should get medical attention immediately, and she didn't.
It's insane. All right, now, this is the most important part. They literally charged her $100 an hour for not treating her. Every hour that she waited there, not being treated with a head injury, they charged her $100 for not treating her. And then they have the audacity to write emails telling them, well, as soon as you step in, the minute we start not treating you, we're charging you. No, that's Alice in Wonderland. By the way, it doesn't happen in any other country. Our corporate media is gaslighting you, telling you this is normal. This is not normal. Government tyranny, hey, right wing, hey, idiots. Government tyranny isn't the mask or the vaccine. It's making you pay this bill for no goddamn reason.
No. The thing is, tyranny is bad when the government's involved, right? But tyranny, good when it's done by corporations. So corporate tyranny, awesome. By the way, I believe that tyranny in any case is awful, which is why I think we should decommodify healthcare completely. There shouldn't be a profit motive behind it. The fact that there's a profit motive behind it with a flaccid, you know, Congress that refuses to do anything about it allows them to do this kind of stuff without ever being held accountable. There's no regulations preventing them from doing this. They do it because they can.
So look, this is, for whatever it's worth, let's start a hashtag corporate tyranny for stories where corporations absolutely rob you blind, and your government does nothing to help you. So Bernie calls it democratic socialism, I call it democratic capitalism, but it's the same thing. The idea is relatively the same thing. The idea is in democracy is supposed to check the excesses and the abuses of big business. If you just leave big business to run things, what are they going to do? They're going to maximize profit. We all know this because we're not reporters. Reporters go, I don't know what companies are gonna do. Do they make a profit? Is that what they try to do? They try to maximize it? I never heard of that. So because why? Because they're part of corporate rule. They're part of corporate tyranny. So they tell you, oh, it's normal for you to get robbed. You go to the emergency room to see a doctor, they rob you of $700. That's a literal robbery. They're saying you pay us $700. By the way, if you don't, eventually they say, oh, well, we put a transfer here, here, here. Now it's the government that you owe and we're putting you in jail. Because debtors' prisons are back. We explained that in another story. Okay, so guys, now we're all scared to death to go to the doctor. I talked to a friend of mine over the weekend. He's like, when I was getting my insurance, they explained to me how they can do surprise billing on me. So they're now just saying it.
Yeah.
Oh, we're gonna do surprise. They said they could send my lab tests to a doctor that's out of network and I'll never know it. And then they'll charge me $2,000. And he said, I don't have $2,000.
That's right. There's no transparency at all when you go visit the doctor, which is why so many Americans, even with insurance, don't go to the doctor to receive the preventative care that they need, right? So look, this is something that really should be talked about more because you look at a country like Cuba, right? Cuba, with all of the economic issues that it has as a result of the United States and its embargo, they're cut off. Cuba is considered a state sponsor of terrorism because of what the Trump administration labeled it as. So it's not just the United States that refuses to do trade or work with Cuba, it's the international community because they're terrified of retaliation from the United States. I give you that context because it's important. They don't have the resources that we have here in the United States, but they're so good about preventative care. You have doctors and nurses literally showing up to people's homes regularly to make sure everyone's okay because they know they can't afford for anyone to get ill to the point where they don't have the treatments necessary for these people, right? So the average life expectancy in Cuba, 78 years. You know what it is in the United States? 78 years. With all of our wealth, with all of our resources, with the top of the line medical treatment and care. But it doesn't matter if you can't afford it. And we don't do anything about preventative care in this country. We discourage people from getting preventative care.
So guys, it's not to say that Cuba's a paradise. That's the right wing talking points that they say about, that we think, right? It's to say that we're really rich in America,
yep,
collectively. And Cuba isn't, for all the reasons that Anna explained. But if you think it's for other reasons, it doesn't matter. You know Cuba's poor. And they got cars from the 1950s, etc. But even they can afford to actually give healthcare to their citizens.
They prioritize it.
And so we have the same life expectancy, but on almost every other measure, the Cuban people are actually healthier than the American people, even though they're that poor. That means that we can definitely afford it. Our government is choosing not to give us healthcare. And so when you get robbed by these corporate health corporations with the surprise bills, and you will almost all of you will get robbed. You will all get surprise bills because when the government does not stop them, they go, oh, well, this is like we won the lottery. We're just gonna take $700 from you, $2,000 from you, $1,000 from you. We're just gonna rob all of you and the government's gonna let us. There are no rules, there's no refs. Why? Because they pay them bribes. We call them campaign contributions. And then they will send in their corporate media thugs to yell at you and tell you, what do you want to be like, Cuba? Oh my God, these guys, this is outrageous. No, you should all just pay whatever the corporations say and shut up about it. No, you don't deserve healthcare. We pay twice as much as every other developed nation. Twice as much. Not 5% more, not 25% more. Twice as much. And every one of those countries has better healthcare by every metric than we do. That means we got robbed of an extra amount of money. That whole second amount, we got 100% robbed by corporations and the corrupt politicians that they bribed. That's what America is.
All right, let's move on to our next story because I might agree with Elon Musk of all people a little bit.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, so Elon Musk is offering to sell some of his Tesla stock if the United Nations can show that $6 billion would help to alleviate world hunger. Now, before I give you the details of the story, let me just note that there are two different things going on, okay? On one hand, you have Elon Musk who's consistently crying about having to pay taxes to a country that provided the seed money for Tesla and many of his business ventures that have made him fabulously wealthy. But that's not what this story is about. This story is about the UN World Food Program. Its director, David Beasley, was recently on CNN, and he specifically called out Elon Musk and other tremendously wealthy Americans and essentially called on them to do their part in donating money to this organization to alleviate world hunger. Let's hear what he had to say.
US billionaires alone have gotten over $1 trillion richer during the pandemic. You're asking those billionaires who are going to space, the likes of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, to help. Are they helping?
The governments are tapped out. And this is why, and this is when that the billionaires need to step up now on a one-time basis, $6 billion to help 42 million people that are literally gonna die if we don't reach them. It's not complicated. And this is what's heartbreaking. I'm not asking them to do this every day, every week, every year. We have a one-time crisis, a perfect storm of conflict, climate change, and COVID. It's a one-time phenomenon. I've got 43 nations with 42 million people in IPC level 4 knocking on famine's door. Just help me with them one time. That's a $6 billion price tag. Jeff Bezos' net worth increase just last year during COVID was $64 billion. I'm just asking for 10% of your net worth increase. Just last week, Elon Musk had a $6 billion net worth increase one day, one day.
So there's obviously some truth to what Beasley's saying, but you know, the World Food Program has some issues, which I'll get to in just a second. Following that interview, they put out a tweet saying a one-time donation from the top 400 billionaires in the United States could help save the lives of 42 million people this year. Now, in response to that, Elon Musk tweeted this: if the World Food Program can describe on its Twitter thread, on this Twitter thread, exactly how $6 billion will solve world hunger, I will sell Tesla stock right now and do it. And so he's challenging them because there is concern that some of that funding, some of those donations are misappropriated, right? And there is some truth behind that. There are also some issues with Beasley, which I'll get to in just a second. So for instance, in 2019, funding was a record $8 billion, of which the largest donors were the United States at $3.4 billion and Germany at $886.6 million. Contributions were insufficient to cover identified needs of food insecure populations with a funding gap of $4.1 billion. And that's according to the World Food Program annual performance report. So they obviously raised a lot of money in 2019, and their analysis of that was it wasn't enough. So it's just interesting to hear Beasley say, like, no, just this one-time donation of $6 billion would like change everything. Now, $6 billion, he claims, will not solve world hunger, this is Beasley, but it will prevent geopolitical instability, mass migration, focus on that for a second, and save $42 million people from the brink of starvation, an unprecedented crisis and a perfect storm due to COVID slash conflict slash climate crisis. Now, he likes to focus a lot on migration and the migration crisis, because he was actually tapped by the Trump administration to lead the World Food Program, specifically to end migration to the United States. That was a huge part of the reason why Trump chose him. I have more details about it in just a second, but Cenk, you wanna jump in?
Yeah, look, in a sense, both are right and both are wrong. Elon Musk is being incredibly obnoxious by saying, oh, give me all your accounting on this Twitter thread. Me. If you actually wanted to solve world hunger, you'd reach out privately and say, is that really true? Can I see the documents? I'm not looking to publicly embarrass you, but if it really can be done and you can convince me, I'd be happy to do it. If I was in his position, 2% of your net wealth, you still, look guys, it's nearly impossible to spend 1 billion in your lifetime. He has over 200 billion. I mean, it's how selfish it is for not just Musk, but Bezos and so many of the others to not do it, it's indescribably greedy. Okay, now that doesn't mean that the organization is right or its leadership is right. So Anna, more details on
that. Yeah, so as Foreign Policy reported, so Beasley has struggled to win over some career staff at the agency's Rome headquarters who felt he hewed too closely to US foreign policy and handed out perks such as business class flights to Geneva in violation of the World Food Program policy to members of its inner circle or his inner circle. So look, I do have an issue with too much reliance on like NGOs and these types of organizations to end massive crises that should be dealt with by governments, right? So in the case of the United States, what I find really, really interesting is the World Food Program, because of the fact that the United States has so much control over it, right? Because it donates a pretty significant portion of its funding. It basically insists on the agriculture being purchased from the United States as opposed to the farmers in the countries where they're trying to alleviate hunger. And you know what that does? That screws over like the farmers, right? They get basically priced out of the market as a result of that. So they're actually doing some harm in the way that they carry out their charity work. And then as Jonathan Larson over at TYT Investigates reported recently, while assuring Musk of transparency, because he did respond to Musk and claimed that he would be transparent, Beasley didn't mention the role he has played out of the public eye as a leader inside the family, a purposely opaque organization with a history of smuggling evangelical Protestantism, including homophobia and misogyny, in charitable packages. The family also serves as a networking hub for right-wing activists working to roll back LGBTQ and reproductive rights.
Yes, so look, the problem here is it's, and I'll say that even of what we're telling you here in our reporting. It is relatively easy to pick apart any program. In this case, this is a Trump appointee and they're forcing people to give money to American, through the American government. The critique is 100% valid, okay? Having said that, greedy pricks like Elon Musk go around going, well, the government shouldn't do it, I don't want you to raise my taxes. No way, right. No way, you just rely on charity. Then you go, okay, then why don't you give me the charity? Oh, hell no. Oh, unless you give me all of the salaries and I humiliate you publicly and then use it as an excuse not to give it to you.
Right.
I'm not gonna give it to you. I was gonna give it to you, but I'm not because of this, this, this. You got a lot of BS excuses, Elon. You're full of crap, okay? You're enormously full of crap. You're hoarding all of that money and you're literally the greediest person on earth. And your buddy Jeff Bezos, that you guys are having some sort of measuring contest with, oh yeah, my rocket looks more like a penis. We all see it, you morons. You think you're so smart because you have all this money and you build giant phalluses to go into space and we're starving down here. And you go, oh yeah, you have the government do it, but don't have the government do it. Have me do it, but don't have me do it. Ha ha, you never got any of the money, did you? We cook it all. You can't bury it with you. Even if you built a giant tomb, what the hell are you gonna do with $200 billion? Guys, if you're not rich, because we're not, none of us are rich, but I know wealthy folks, okay? And I know what that, like it's, and you don't, Chris Rock said it, Chris Rock said it. If poor people knew how much money rich people have, there'd be a revolution overnight, okay? They have, it's so much money, you cannot spend $1 billion. Unless you're buying a sports team, you cannot spend 1 billion, let alone 200 billion. Our minds cannot comprehend how much money that is. And that greedy little prick, Elon Musk, sits there going, no, mine, mine. You've turned into Gollum and you don't even realize it. So, oh, have fun on Twitter making fun of poor people. God, you're so cool.
All right, that does it for our fiery first hour. When we come back, Leon Cooperman is back. He's crying again. He thinks that billionaires are just, you know, unfairly being picked on. So we'll hear from him and also Lauren Boebert, who is bragging about delivering babies in the back of trucks. Awesome. We'll see you then.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.